Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
The martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
In the studio, we have three very giddy girls, Olivia Fahey, Michelle Lawler, and Serena Bellissimo. It's their description of themselves, so just in case anyone starts slagging me for being sexy.
We haven't tasted the wine yet.
And you haven't even tasted the wine yet. Why are you all so
a
giddy?
A little bit of sun. Some bubbles. And we're in with you, Sean. Like,
okay, me? I'm a black hole of misery. Where are
we're here to bring the joy. Yeah,
you might think you're happy now. Anyway, Michelle is in continuing your occasional series where you bring in wines I hate, Pinot Grigio.
Sorry, I actually was like, and I think there was a Pinot Grigio one not so long ago. However, I think I have possibly brought in not only the best Pinot Grigio in the world.
No bar.
My other half is always like, can you stop talking things up? You set everything up for disappointment. Because I'm like, this is so good. So listen, we have a Pinot Grigio, but it's not like a regular Pinot Grigio, because Pinot Grigio over the last 20 years is kind of associated with, you know, probably one of the most affordable wines that you can buy with the least amount of flavour and the largest hangover, I say it.
Yeah.
So, what it is primarily is a rosé, and the sun is out and it's a stunner of a day, certainly in Dublin. So I thought we'll do something fun in a rosé, and like, I do like the French rosés and the Provence style, but like, come on, let's do something different.
Okay.
So this particular one is by a guy who has won.
Well, have you told us about the other one?
No, I was just going to go straight into it.
Yeah, you were going straight into it. No. I'm sorry, I know. You're new, Michelle, as we say, very giddy. Just tell us about the other one briefly.
Okay. Yeah. The other one is the most amazing Albarino you'll ever try. Bar
okay.
High. So
is it even better than the Pinot Grigio?
It is extremely rare, sparkling Albarino, Petnat style. There's only 12 bottles left in the country. Look how lucky you
okay.
are.
All right,
exactly.
Okay. Right, so is this the 13th we're drinking from and there's 12 apart from this? Or
no,
or
I've taken one out of stock.
So that's
so
11.
Probably oversell one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. Right, and the two movies now, the Mr. Sadface, his latest Ryan Gosling's movie, Project Hail Mary.
Are you talking about yourself there?
No, but he does, you know, he has the kind of sad, you know, yeah. while being tremendously handsome and all that stuff
as
well,
and actually,
of course.
That's pretty much what he's doing in this as well, because he's lost in space by himself and, you know, all sad and not really knowing how he got there. But it's actually, instead of it being kind of like snooze fest, gravity sort of style, this is actually like very entertaining, very funny and very heartfelt
yeah,
as
or
well.
Did you not like Gravity?
No.
You're so negative. I like Gravity. I must say,
excuse me, I am not Miss Negative.
No, you're not.
Positive.
No, I know.
I paid my dues last time I was in. This time I have two great films to talk about.
Right, and Ready or Not, Here I Come is the follow-up to Ready or Not.
It is indeed.
Yeah, is it about playing hide and seek?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's great. That's what I wanted to hear. I can't wait for it. I'm projecting myself into the future where you come in to do a review of the Labubu movie.
You can't wait, Kenny, Sean.
But there is going to be one.
Well, I saw Labubu hanging off your bag there, so you'd be really keen.
Yeah, well, actually, it probably crept off my daughter or 20 of them trying to kill me. So what is this?
So
this
basically what's happened is after the Labubu dolls, was it last year when all of a sudden they just took off and PopMart all of a sudden became worth almost $40 billion because of Labubus.
Yeah.
So, of course, after the success of Barbie, everyone's going, of course we can make movies about toys and it'll be successful. So they've come out, Sony and PopMart have actually announced in Paris on Wednesday when they were doing a global exhibition tour for Labubu's 10th anniversary. So what this teaches me is that if you have an idea and you think it's not working, hold on to it, because 9 years later it may become a success. So they've turned around and they've said, we're going to make a movie, but get this, they're not just going to make a movie. The director that they have on board is Paul King. His credits include Wonka, Paddington, and the BBC series, The Mighty Boosh. And then Stephen Levinson is the writer behind the stage show Dear Evan Hansen and the musical Tick, Tick, Boom. Based on that alone, I would have gone, oh, this is going to be terrible. I can't wait to see what they develop. We don't know anything. We don't know when it's going into development, when things are going to move ahead, but they've announced that they're exploring this idea.
Okay, so they don't know even if it's live action or animated.
It's going to be, hold on a sec, I do know this. They said, I think it's going to be
one of those
action,
two.
No, both. Yeah. Live action and computer generated animation.
Right.
In
okay.
Very, very, very early development.
Yeah.
So why not announce this?
Yeah, why not? But the thing is that Barbie has been around for decades.
Yeah.
Labubu were around for 10 years, but they really only took off like 18 months ago or
exactly.
something. And it was like the arc was 6 months and then boom.
And they're freaking. But
if you go into any of those cheap phone shops now, they're like giving away Labubus.
Exactly.
They can't sell them now.
And this is probably why they've announced it, to generate excitement around it again and hopefully create the interest again and get them selling.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I don't know what's taken over from Labubus, but I'm sure something has.
Actually, I don't know. Because it has been called, let's not jinx ourselves, we'll wake up on Monday morning and go, that's what's taken over.
But there will be something else if there isn't something else already.
Maybe we can think of something.
Your average 10-year-old
Pokemon cards.
No, they come and go.
No, they're big right now.
Well, Kiernan Shipka was like opening a packet of Pokemon cards during the Oscars, and she got like a very rare Pikachu out of it. So that's everyone's kind of been talking about that quite a bit. So I think Pokemon cards are back in vogue again.
Job, I just weaned my 10-year-old off the Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
And he actually tells me, Mum, you don't know, I could probably have a deposit for a house in these cards. I'm like, probably with the amount of money you've spent on those cards.
Yeah, and it's like they have to have gold cards and all that stuff.
Yeah. I'm just going to go hide with all of the judgment in here.
And half them are fake anyway.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not really worth what they say they're worth.
I have a Pokemon joke.
Okay.
Sorry, it's burning me up here.
Yeah, go on.
Why can't you play hide and seek with a Pokemon?
I don't know.
Because he might Pikachu.
There you go.
Jokes for four-year-olds.
Wow, I wonder how many listeners we've just lost. Anyway, we've listeners left in Rathangan, because if you've noticed loads of cameras and stuff around the place, what's going to happen there?
Very exciting. So Hollywood's come to Rathangan. I think they're going to finish filming either today or tomorrow. It was a 3-day shoot for a Netflix film called Walk the Blue Fields. It's based on a book by Irish author Claire Keegan. It's starring, so if you are in Rathangan, keep your eyes out for Andrew Scott, Kieran Hines and Emily Blunt. They've done what they did to, was it Enniscarry when they redid all the store fronts
and Disenchanted.
So they've sort of done the same thing. A lot of the storefronts have been changed for this movie. So it's filming there between 1 o'clock till 11:30 p.m. at night. So if you're in the area and you're thinking what's going on, Hollywood is going on. And I'd say it'll actually finish today or tomorrow.
I wonder what happens when they dicky up villages like that. And do people think, God, I like it this way now rather than putting it back the way it was before?
So in my village, there was
You owned a village.
Yeah. Tell you more about that. There was a unused restaurant for a little while, and there was a film crew there for a week or so. And I was like, oh, this, it was called the Starlight Cafe. Still can't figure out what they were doing. And it looks so cool. I was so disappointed. As quickly as it went up, it came down.
Oh.
So I don't know, is that for copyright reasons? Is that they don't want more photos getting out until they're ready to publicise what they're doing? Don't know. I would have loved for it to stay.
Yeah, but it's probably a temporary structure at the front of it.
Oh, yeah, just the facade.
Yeah,
it probably
would have fallen down eventually. And Val Kilmer is going to be in a movie. Now, I don't know how I feel about this. Might think it's kind of cool, but I don't know.
Is it really, though? Like, this man, God rest him, but he's dead.
Yeah.
Why is he still working after he's dead? Like, do we not get a time to stop? And do you know what? This is a film, so it's called As Deep as the Grave, and it's based on a true story of archaeologists Anne and Earl Morris. They worked with the Navajo people in 1920s to uncover North America's earliest silk civilization. This is a project that Val was really interested in before he passed.
Okay.
He passed last year at 65. They had cast him in this role. Now, just because he was interested in it and really wanted to do it and he'd been cast, is that enough of a reason to then just go, let's not recast the role and let's cast him in AI? But they have the family's backing and everything. So they're saying that a significant portion of the film is actually going to include his character, and that will be AI. So, and look, I'm just more worried.
But they wouldn't have shot anything of him to base any of this on.
No, so they just use his old stuff. And, and who knows, like if they're doing this, they can then age him. It may not be Val Kilmer at 65 and we're going to get Val. I don't know what age this person is. So they can maybe change up the age and stuff. I just think it's very scary when you start stuff like this. You open the floodgates and it soon it may not just be people who have passed who have their AI generated thing up there. I mean, last year, Michael Caine and Matthew McConaughey, they actually signed deals with 11 Labs to allow the company to create AI versions of their voices.
They allowed that.
Now, is that smart? Are they getting on top of stuff going, look, this is happening anyway, so I may as well have some control of what's going on? Or are we just walking into something blindly?
Well, you'd wonder what the law is around that anyway. Now, as you say, the estate gave permission, but could they have stopped them if it's a dead person?
Well, that's the interesting part. Because, yeah, when does copyright and...
I think it's something to do with like the way that the SAG... deals were done, especially during the strike. They were putting in a lot of these kind of safety nets for the AI incoming sort of generation. And that was something that they were putting into it, is that like just because someone has passed doesn't mean you can use them. Because I remember the Galaxy chocolate ad with Audrey Hepburn, like back in the day. Like that's still, that was probably our first example of this kind of happening. But I do know that they're still trying to put in like safety nets into all of these contracts for actors, not only in film and television, but also in video games and animation work and things like that, just to make sure that this is done properly. So I do think that if it's a SAG supported project, then it should abide by these rules. If it's not, then it's kind of free game.
Yeah. Though online, like you can go anywhere and there's all sorts of mad stuff and, you know, Pat Kenny selling timeshares and you know, you go after these people. Well, he's not, obviously, but there's all these fake adverts that you can see if you go into social media. Without, I'm only using Pat as an example of that. I think they've stung them that way, but they've done it to a load of Irish people. And there's always this, so-and-so was on the Late Late Show and, you know, said this shocking thing, you know, and it is to try and sell you something, of course.
Weight loss tablets, and then they have the person
But it's whack-a-mole, you know, chasing these people. It's, God, it's frightening. Let's have a drink.
On that note. Let's toast that now.
Yeah.
So the first wine we are going to try is our sparkling Albarino. So some nice fizz. This is a pet nat, so it is sealed with a crown cap.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was hoping for. Not the gross stuff. So this is a pet nat.
Why do they do that?
So this is made by a method called Method Ancestral. And so it's completely different to champagne and cava. So champagne and cava is fermented twice, right? So when you want to make a champagne or a cava, and I feel like that's the benchmark style of sparkling wine and Prosecco, you ferment the wine once and then you add a bit of sugar and a bit of yeast and you ferment it a second time.
Mm.
So you're firstly, you have a still wine, like say a regular Albarino, and then you add a bit of sugar and yeast. And when a wine is fermenting, it looks like a kettle boiling, right? All bubbles and stuff. So you have to leave, if you're in a winery, the lid is open on a lot of tanks in that period of time to let the gases go out. How do you get the gas in or the bubbles into your champagne? The lid is closed, so the bubbles have nowhere to go, so they go back inside. So each bottle of champagne and cava, they're like a microbrew. The bubbles are individual to each bottle. But there's a style called Pet Nat. Has anyone seen that in the trendy bars? Or Method, Pet Nat Natural or Method Ancestral. You can identify it because they're generally sealed with a beer closure. It's called a crown cap. And what happens in this one is that it's not fermented twice. It's fermented once. So when this is in the middle of its first fermentation, the lid is off, the bubbles are gone everywhere. They effectively close the lid. And so those last bit of bubbles created in that fermentation can't escape. They go back inside the bottle and that's what you get. And that's how a pet nat is made. So they're cool in a lot of ways. There is nothing added and nothing taken away. So with champagne, for example, you can have a typical champagne might have between 8 and 12 grams of sugar per litre. That's a brut. You might have an extra brut and other things. But with a pet nat, there is nothing added. So they tend to be the driest styles. And oftentimes I'd be asked, what's the skinniest drink I can have? And the answer is actually a gin and slimline tonic. It's not wine. Okay. Just saying. But pet nats are very, very dry because they don't add sugar to kickstart the second fermentation. So it's a really cool one. And also, and I'm sure it's been mentioned before on the show, when you have a fully sparkling wine and you can identify a fully sparkling wine by, it's called a champagne closure, you know, the big cork stopper and like the cage and all that stuff. They're charged double tax at €6.40, whereas a pet nat is the regular bottle because the pressure is less. So in a bottle of champagne or a bottle of cava, there is more pressure in that than a car tyre. Okay, that's why they need the thick bottles and the big closures to hold everything together and stop the explosion. However, in a pet nat, the pressure is much less. So you don't need to have that. And it's, I mean, why would you charge double tax? Absolutely no reason.
It's a weird criterion, really. Yeah,
and in actual fact, it doesn't. It's literally someone drew a line here, and anything over that is double, and anything under it is single. So anyway, we have an extremely rare bottle of sparkling Albarino.
It's nice.
It is so nice.
It's
so
got a bit of a biscuity thing going on that you would associate with champagne, really.
Oh my God, it's like you're doing the segment for me, Sean. I was literally about to
now.
Say,
yeah.
Right? So the colour of this, it's kind of golden. And I would often describe wines that they taste like the colour they are. And this is brioche in colour. I'm not joking. It's like I said, you know, it's in advance. Yeah. I don't think I said that though. But it's got this gorgeous lemony brioche colour, and then that's what you taste. And so the reason why I've picked this one is because this is literally 50% cheaper than a bottle of champagne, this particular wine. Mm. And I think the flavour, the depth of flavour, and the acidity, the juiciness, Albarino, which is the grape here. And so Albarino is grown in an area called Rías Baixas. And I would say that's like the Donegal of Spain, that kind of northwestern tip on the coast in the Atlantic. And the Albarino grape actually has a really lovely acidity. So it's able to hold that really well. The flavour lasts a nice time. The bubbles are lovely. And it's produced by this producer called Albemarle. I love, love, love the label for this. But Albemarle make their standard Albarino, you would find in a lot of the Michelin restaurants and those high, the premium restaurants, because it's a very good bottle of Albarino. So they've taken these really, really exceptional grapes and made something super cool out of that. And so anyway, there's when you see NV written on a champagne, which means non-vintage, so a house can like blend from a few years and they'll have a base vintage. And that means, say, the Moët you try tomorrow will be the same that you tried 2 years ago in flavour profile. But this is produced every year. So it's just a reflection of what Mother Nature gave you in that year. It's super cool. It's kind of salty as well, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the sea breeze.
So it can vary a little bit.
Yeah,
then,
which
from
is
year
cool.
To year.
So
yeah.
This is Mother Nature. It's not mass produced. And that's why I thought it was cool. And the theme I was going for today was hidden gems for spring.
I have a question for you, Michelle.
Okay, sorry, you got a word in.
Yeah. How do you get a Pikachu on a bus?
I don't know.
Your Pokemon.
Hey! That's a great.
Thanks to the listener, whoever sent that in. Would you like to do Project Hail Mary first?
Sure,
Olivia?
Why
yeah.
not?
Okay, Project Hail Mary coming up after this.
Grace looked disgust when eat.
How do you look when you eat?
It looked beautiful.
Show me. Oh my God. Oh my God.
He has incredible hearing. He can see through walls. Personal space is at a premium.
Who is Grace talking to? Question.
There's no way you can hear me right now.
Can hear. Who are you talking to?
You can hear this.
Yes, Grace, say you can hear this.
What about this?
Yes.
Oh my God. Look at this. Look how far away.
That's Project Hail Mary there, Ryan Gosling and his space buddy. So, yeah. So, the odd thing is that, like, he wakes up on the spaceship and he doesn't know why he got there. But the trailer tells you the complete backstory that he was a teacher.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. And it's also, like, it's told through flashbacks as well. So it's, like, the current story intertwined with the flashbacks.
Yeah.
So, and actually, normally I find them very jolty, not very smooth. But this is actually very, like, consistent throughout. So I thought that was actually really well done. Essentially, there's this thing called astrophage, which is a kind of like a radiated molecule of some sort that they need to figure out, like, what it is. Turns out it's a type of cell and it is basically eating the sun and eating kind of like all of the other stars. So they need to go and travel to see why this one particular star it's not being eaten, essentially.
Yeah, okay.
And they're sending like an engineer, a pilot and a scientist, and Grace is our scientist, played by Ryan Gosling. And essentially, he was the one training them. So you have to wait until the end to try and find out how he actually ended up on the ship himself, because he doesn't even know. And that's kind of where like the mystery side of things comes from. But he is essentially by himself for most of the film until he encounters the most adorable alien you'll ever see in your life, called Rocky. And I don't know if people have seen like clips or seen like little these kind of like fun installments that they've got installations around. Like I think there's one in London and things like that, where you actually just see this kind of like rock made creature. That's Rocky, and that's who we heard in that clip as well.
Okay, and is he kind of like a spider?
Yeah, like a Rocky spider, which yeah. You know, as someone who's arachnophobic, I actually found him very adorable. So I was like, okay, clearly my brain hadn't made too much of a connection with the spider reference. The way that they try and communicate, basically he learns kind of like what sounds Rocky is making, and then puts them into this computer program to try and generate the voice and generate the words so they can communicate with each other and try and figure out, because they're both, after finding each other in space for the same reason, they're both trying to figure out what the astrophage is and why it works the way that it works. Okay. And how they can save their planet.
Yeah. So, but it's a kind of, it's a buddy movie.
It really is a buddy movie in space, even though like when you go into it, it really does, like when you watch the trailers, it just looks kind of like a funny version of Gravity, whereas it's actually something completely different. And I kind of loved that. Some people may not like that kind of bait and switch from like what the trailer is showing you to what the film actually is, but I absolutely loved it. And even with them trying to figure out how are they going to communicate, there's one bit where he's trying to teach him what a fist bump is, and he was like, fist my bump. And for some reason, that just makes
that's a whole different meaning.
Everybody's a child, and everybody laughs, and it's just like they just drop it in like when you least expect it. And even like there's this lovely like touching moment between them, and then it ends up really, really funny. And it's that kind of, you know, it's heartfelt, but it's still funny. So even though you're like just on the verge of tears, you end up like cry laughing instead. And I really liked that kind of balance between the two tones.
Yeah.
It was just, and it's beautiful looking as well. Like absolutely stunning. They use sound, whether it's actual sound or silence, to perfection. It's just a really enjoyable watch. The only downside is it's really freaking long. And it just bugs me when
How
films
long?
Just 156 minutes.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
2 and a bit hours.
It is a little bit on the hefty runtime.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of bits where they kind of gloss over like the explanations around certain things, like how Rocky gets from his kind of like hamster ball thing that he can run around the ship in to his tunnels, which he has now created that he can run around the ship in as well. So like, it's like, how
does
can
Rocky
he get in there?
Does Rocky have a spaceship as well?
He has some spaceship, but the conditions inside the spaceship are so harsh that it would kill Grace if he was to go on board there.
Okay.
So Rocky, because he can create all of these cool things, he basically was like, I can come onto your ship. It's going to be much easier.
Yeah.
And that's
okay.
what he did.
And is there a great sense of jeopardy given that they've both been sent there to save the universe?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, if they don't figure it out, then all of the planets are going to die, because anything that is reliant on the stars in the vicinity is just going to perish, because that's how dangerous this astrophage is.
Okay. And you don't see anyone back on Earth going, can you hear us, or freaking
nope, they're so far away. So the only time you actually see other humans is in all of the flashback scenes, and basically explaining like what the danger is, how he got involved in the storyline in the first place, and how basically he's going to try and save the world.
Okay. And now, and it is going for a kind of a lighter tone.
It is.
Really?
When you've got the likes of Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who are behind like the likes of the Lego Movie, Across the Spider-Verse, that kind of thing, they definitely go for the lighter tone. But because they're also like, they are very skilled directors, and you can kind of see like their influence on not only the humor, but also the kind of cinematography and some of the little winks and nods that they have throughout as well. So it's something very special, and something that I wasn't expecting to like as much as I did.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, kind of like, because it's Ryan Gosling, you know, if it had been someone else in there, it mightn't have worked as well.
Oh, do you know what? That's a very good point, because at the end of the day, Ryan has this kind of dorky charm about him.
Yeah.
And I think ever since Barbie, I think that's, he's really kind of like lent into that comedy side. We did see it in The Nice Guys as well, but he doesn't really do comedy all that much since then. But he is very good, and it's like there's also like a bit of slapstick comedy in there as well, because he's tripping over things and knocking over stuff, and he's just a goofy little dork who you know likes science and things like that. So it's and he wears like these really like nerdy looking cardigans as well. No. So like the whole look is just big nerd.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a harder sell, I would have thought, for Ryan Gosling.
Oh, it's Ryan Gosling still.
What does a Pokemon say when it has a cold?
Pikachu.
Yeah. There you go. Throw the ball up and give it a punt. Yeah. The studio season 2, Madonna's going to be in it.
I know, I'm so excited. I think this was a surprise hit for Apple. Studio season 1, it was Seth Rogen. It won all the Emmys last year. This was Catherine O'Hara's last role. Mm-hmm. She was coming back for season 2, so that's going to be a really hard void to fill. Great cast as well. There's Catherine Hahn, Bryan Cranston, as I said, Seth Rogen. One of the great things about the studio was that it was set in Hollywood, like live action, not live action, but like actual locations, and there were great cameos in season 1. So we had Martin Scorsese, playing himself.
And he was really good.
Wasn't he? Yeah. He was amazing. So Madonna posted during the week, she was clad in a wide-brimmed Louis Vuitton hat and she was on the set and she just wrote in the caption, "The Italian Job." And I remember seeing that going, what are you talking about? But for some reason, so maybe the studio goes to the Venice Film Festival. I don't know what it is, but they're in Venice. So it looks like, so Madonna could be.
Not the crap they were making in season 1 wouldn't end up in Venice, I wouldn't have thought.
I don't know what they're doing in Venice, but Madonna's there. But she wasn't the only one spotted. There was Michael Keaton and Julia Garner, who funnily enough has been cast to play Madonna in this biopic, if we ever see this biopic of Madonna. Yeah. So I love it. I didn't realise the last time we actually saw Madonna acting on screen in a live action role wasn't a great one. It was 2002 and it was swept away.
Mm.
That's the last time we saw her on screen.
She's not great at the old acting, really.
She was great at Evita. She was nominated for an Oscar for Evita.
Yeah, never saw that. I remember suddenly Seeking Susan and she...
Oh, I loved that.
Yeah, but she wasn't the star of it, really.
No, Rosanna Arquette was
the
that.
One. That was her big kind of breakout thing, really.
But I will watch her. Even,
oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah. And if she's being Madonna, an OTT Madonna in the studio, I can't wait for season 2. As it's going to be bittersweet because, as I said, Catherine O'Hara is not coming back for it, obviously. But I'm interested to see what they do with it.
Yeah. Now, and the new trailer for Spider-Man, what is this one called?
This is called A Brand New Day. Right. And I was going to say, I didn't realise people were that excited about it, but as soon as you mentioned it, Olivia started clapping and cheering. Yeah. And
I've been waiting a long time for this trailer because it's due out in July and this is our first look at it. So we've all been waiting
for
a while.
When will the movie arrive if it takes them 6 months to cut together a trailer?
I know.
You're not the only one excited. I'm sure you haven't watched it 718.6 million times.
Close.
I'm probably
the 16 million of it.
Yeah. Well, it broke records. Yeah. In 24 hours, over 718 million people had viewed it. It was really interesting the way that they marketed this trailer as well. They didn't release it all in its entirety. They went to the Spider-Man fan community and gave some fans like 2 seconds of the trailer each to put on their socials and stuff. So they generated buzz. And then, so cool, it ended with Tom Holland at the top of the Empire State Building and they released the full clip.
Two minutes.
So,
okay.
Look, I am not Olivia obsessed with Spider-Man, but I have to say, after watching this, I think when it comes to superheroes, this is the one I quite enjoy, especially this cast. And I think Spider-Man isn't just about his Spider-Man superhero antics, there's a bit of heart. And in this film, it's not a spoiler, if you haven't seen it, bad luck, your fault. In the last film, he basically had to erase the memory of all of his friends and family. So in this film, we're going to see the repercussions of that. And we see a bit of a sad Peter Parker to begin with.
Okay. Is he still in high school?
No, he's in
Has he got a job yet?
He's in university now.
All right, okay. But he's been in university for a while then, hasn't he?
Not this version. This version, we've seen him go through high school and now there's going to be a little bit of a time jump. So I think he's in university at MJ. And
Bruce Banner is in
Bruce
this
Bruce Banner
too.
Is Mark one of Ruffalo. His lecturers, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, the Hulk, yeah. And is it the same guy who usually plays
Mark
the Hulk?
Mark Ruffalo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
So it looks like it could be good. It is going to be worth the wait, I think. 31st of July.
Yeah.
We've only got a few more months to wait.
And so, as trailers go for films you want to see, Olivia?
Oh, this is pretty damn good. And it also kind of incorporates a few different
angles. There's a lot of fan theories going around about it. There's this evil group called The Hand, which people may or fans may recognise from the Defenders and Daredevil series on Netflix. They are potentially back in the film, or could it be some sort of hallucination kind of images that are being projected into his brain kind of thing? No one really knows. There's a lot of rumours about Jean Grey is going to be in it, played by Sadie Sink. And, you know, there's just so much to talk about. And it's being directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, who did Shang-Chi. And I just think he's such a wonderful, wonderful director. I'm very excited to see what he... You're laughing at me because I'm so excited.
No, it's just like all that speculation about what does this mean? Like, I mean, a fella texted in, or I don't know if it was a fella, but I'm assuming, texted in saying, a lot of people think that the bombing of Pearl Harbor was a false flag event. You know, this is people online. Is it the same people who have all these theories about, you know, Marvel movies?
No.
Okay,
because
sorry.
We have things to base it off of.
Yeah. Okay.
Like comics that actually exist in the world.
In the real world. Right. Madonna's film was Desperately Seeking Susan, not Suddenly Seeing Susan. No, but she did suddenly see her in the course of it.
There was a TV show called Suddenly Susan starring Brooke Shields.
Yeah.
But Madonna wasn't in that.
She wasn't in that.
Oh my God, I'm so confused. You are listening to the Bob Creep Show on Newstalk. We'll take a break after that. More movies and booze. Let's have a drink and to Kaylee and Kerry. Ooh, what absolutely. Are we having now?
So we're having Pinot Grigio, Rosé Aromato. And Sean, before you comment, wait at least 15 seconds because it tastes way better after 15 seconds.
Okay. All right?
So what this is Pinot Grigio from an area in the Venezia region called Friuli Colli Orientali. And in this area, in the Venezia, it's also very close to where you're going to get Amarone. And if you think of Italy like the leg, you're right up in the hip, kind of in the mountains or the mountainous part of Italy, if you're thinking, where is this wine actually from? And that is... other cool, like premium things up there are Amarone, if you're wondering. Mm. And Pinot Grigio, like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the B word. Probably not.
What is the B word?
Bastardized.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I've said it now.
Yeah, you've said it now. It's too late.
But it has been over the past 15, 20 years where Pinot Grigio is actually produced to a high quality, is really aromatic and intense. And nearly Albarino-esque. But it's a Pinot, it's a rosé in this scenario. And Ramato is actually the Italian for copper. And if you have a look at it, the colour, and then my glass is empty, I have to confess. It is copper coloured. And so how can you get what should be a white wine, which is Pinot Grigio, in the colour of copper? And if you go to the shop and you buy a bunch of white grapes and a bunch of red grapes and you cut them both open, there is no colour in the pulp of the red or the white grape. So how does any wine get colour? For the red grapes, they spend time, the skin with the juice, to give it a little bit of colour. Pinot Grigio is a grey pink skinned grape. So Pinot Grigio in its natural form, to spend a little bit of time on its skins, will give it a pink colour. So you'll now notice when you go to the shops maybe over the summer that, oh look, there's Pinot Grigio Rosé, and it's not that they've added like some pink food dye or something into it to give it that colour. That's actually one of the best and original expressions that you would get of a Pinot Grigio Rosé. So it's really, really lovely. I would say, and a lot of times we're kind of nearly conditioned into loving the Provençal style, you know, the Whispering Angels and things of the world where they're like really light, really dry and nearly, they're more about texture than flavour. But this one is definitely about flavour and texture. And it's got, and you say, okay, if a wine tastes like the colour it is, and it's that kind of coppery, strawberry, cherry, like sour cherry, it's quite tart. And quite dry. It's got a really, what I love about this is how long the finish stays. And that I'm still talking, you can still taste it. And it sits there for a long time. It's a really, really high quality glass of wine. And I first came across this producer, which is called Spicagna, 20 years ago. And I remember meeting this winemaker thinking, God, he's kind of young and goofy. And I was just doing a little bit of research today, and I'd since changed jobs, changed continents, come back, been left, all these type of things. And his name is Christian Spicagna. And he has been...
Did that all happen to him or you?
Me, sadly. So this guy, Christian Spicagna, so his grandfather set up the winery. And in the last few years, he's won Best Italian Young Winemaker. In 2025, he won Wine Enthusiast, which is one of the big wine publications, won Future 40 Tastemakers. They won 50 Best Young Winemakers in the World, and in TripAdvisor, top 10% for guest experiences in the winery. So it's like a really cool project. Very similar to the Albarino Sparkling. It's produced in very small quantities. You kind of have to go to somewhere high end to get it. We have both of these on our website as it stands. But yeah, just something really cool and different. And you know, you might think, oh, sure, I'll have a glass of Prosecco or I'll have a glass of French Rosé or something. The sun is out. Do something different. Have a bit of fun with your glass of wine. And these are two really cool examples of what summer can give for you or spring can give for you in the heat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you like them?
Somebody wants to know, where can I get Trento DOC? Now, they'd written it as Trento DOC. I was asking Michelle, what the hell is that? In Ireland, much nicer than Prosecco, I think. It's delicious. I actually had it in Italy recently. Ferrari is a popular brand.
Oh, yes. Ferrari is a popular brand and you can get that. You'll do a little bit of a search online for it. You will definitely get it. So Trento is a place. And DOC is like the French version of AOC or Appellation.
Right.
So to call your wine Trento, the grapes have to be grown in that Trento area. I would say you're going to have to go to your specialist store and ask them. And they might get it for you. Normally, if you ask a shop, can they get you a wine in? You're going to have to commit to a box. They're not going to just like bring in a box and you have a bottle and then there's five bottles knocking around for 2 years. But definitely ask your local shop and they'll have a look for you.
Okay. All right. That's good. Now, there's going to be no Buffy reboot. I think we were talking about that before. That didn't last long.
No. So, yeah, you're not happy about that?
No. And I like Ryan Kira Armstrong as well, who's going to be the new Slayer.
So, yeah, they'd cast a new Slayer. I was shocked when, okay, I'm not a big Buffy fan, so I didn't realise that Chloe Zhao, who directed Hamnet, was behind this. She approached Sarah Michelle Gellar and said, I have a great idea. Since the series ended back in, was it 2003? Yeah, 2003. Fans have been going, let's go back, let's go back. They finally started working on something. There's been a bad taste that's been left in both these women's mouths, and it's not because of the fact that the pilot just hasn't gone ahead. It's the way it happened. So the fact that Sarah Michelle Gellar was going onto stage at the South by South West Festival to promote Ready or Not 2, she gets a phone call, and this is by Searchlight, who were behind this reboot as well. She gets a phone call before she step on the stage to be told, do you know what? We're not going ahead. Chloe, the same weekend that she is celebrating her Oscars run, like this is going to end, the Oscars would end that whole awards season run. They decided to call her then too. Like, would they not have waited till at least the Monday to break the news, let these women have a great time? But no. And then the other thing that she's come out and said as well, there was one executive who kept going to set going, I've never been a big Buffy fan anyway. And he made sure that everyone knew he wasn't a big fan of Buffy.
Oh, dear.
So she's not, I wouldn't be happy about that either. But then she was on a radio show recently and one of the interviewers asked her and said, look, there's, you know, some of the scripts have been leaked. What would you say to fans? You know, there's a lot of fans who are excited to read the script. And she turned around and said, I would advise that you don't read the script because it was a pilot script. So there was a lot of workings out and goings on. I don't want you to interpret what that script could have been or would have been because you probably come up with the wrong answer. So if you're a Buffy fan and see a pilot or a script lurking around online, maybe stay away because it's not what they wanted to produce.
Yeah, and you're not going to see it anyway.
Exactly.
We don't know yet.
There is still talk about possibly it coming back, but at the moment we don't. At the moment, it's a no. I did appreciate that Sarah Michelle Gellar did take to her Instagram straight away and got that news out there. So she wasn't hiding. She wasn't saying, you know, we've decided to go in a different direction. She's like, no, we're disappointed and this is what's happened.
Yeah. Speaking of Ready or Not 2, as Serena mentioned there, that's our next movie to review. Here's a clip.
Listen, you guys seem like good people and I don't even know why I'm here. We haven't seen each other in like 7 years.
Why not?
It's complicated.
Nice leverage, moron. This thing doesn't even care about the other thing.
You two don't get along?
We had a falling out.
About what?
Right, Olivia, you have to pretend I know nothing about the first movie or the second movie, which will be method acting for me. So you're going to have to explain both aspects to it, because this one starts immediately after the first one ends.
Literally the last scene of the first film is the first scene of the second film. So essentially this girl called Grace, she is getting married, she's so happy, and the family are like, okay, it's tradition that we play a game after the ceremony, and you've got to pick a card from this box and that's going to determine what game we play. She picks the card hide and seek. Oh, it turns out her in-laws are devil worshippers, and she is basically going to be hunted to be sacrificed to the devil. And
okay,
that's basically what happens. In the first film, she beats them all. She wins. She gets to survive. You know,
does this all happen on the day of the wedding?
On the day of the wedding,
Wow,
she has to survive until dawn. And then dawn arrives and she's just like, woohoo. All she wanted was a cigarette. And she's there in her blood-soaked wedding dress. And is just like, yep, I've survived. That's it. Turns out, not so much. She's going to have to go through this all over again within 24 hours of surviving the first round, because the council of families who basically all worship the devil are not happy that she has now won, and that now that this family have perished, there is a seat at the table and they can all sort of go into battle for this ring, which is going to give them ultimate power in the world.
Okay, and so but why...
make sense?
That makes sense, yeah. But what's it... No, they're not happy about it, but there's another seat at the table. What's it got to do with her? Well, they could just ignore her.
So basically, the way that they're going to do it is, oh, whoever kills the bride gets the ring. And that's how she gets dragged back into it.
Okay.
But also not alone this time, because her sister, who... You know, she was supposed to have like absolutely no family. Turns out she has an estranged sister. She was still her next of kin or in case of emergency. So when she was brought to the hospital, who do they call? The annoying little sister, played by Catherine Newton. And basically they decide not only are they going to take the bride, they're going to take the sister too. And they are handcuffed together trying to run for their lives.
Okay, is it better than the first one? About the same?
About the same. Do you know what? I'd say it's a really worthy sequel. So I don't think I could actually pick between the two of them, because...
It's a really good way of saying it's all right.
No,
it's all right.
I really enjoyed the two of them. And I actually think they make a really good kind of like movie marathon, like watch them back to back. You'll enjoy the second one just as much as you do the first one. It's different enough to stand on its own 2 feet, but it's also still got a lot of the charm, the edge. And, you know, Elijah Wood is an evil lawyer. You know, what more could you want? And Sarah Michelle Gellar is in it, as you said. She's kind of channeling a little bit more of her, like, her Cruel Intentions kind of character. So she's a little bit more evil, a little bit more menacing, but absolutely brilliant.
Okay, absolutely brilliant.
She's absolutely brilliant.
Okay, she's but itself, it's like 3-star territory.
Actually, no, do you know what? I'd probably give it a 4. I really, really enjoyed it. And there's a scene towards the end where Samara Weaving's character Grace finally gets to change out of her wedding dress. And what
she's still in her wedding dress.
Oh, yes.
I know. You can smell this film. Yeah.
She's still in the wedding dress, blood soaked and all, and the blood soaked Converse. But she finally gets to change clothes. And what she has on her at the end, I'm not going to spoil what it is, but cosplayers around the world are going to be channeling this outfit. It's stunning.
For movie number 3.
Yes.
For movie number 3.
Well, actually, hopefully not movie number 3. The way they've ended it, hopefully that is the end.
You know, that's not the case necessarily. At all. That's all out for today. That's all that we have time for. Thanks to Serena Bellissimo, Michelle Lawler and Olivia Trampstamp Fahey. I'm only quoting Michelle there during the ad.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.